This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia. We're on the Sports History Network and in conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in North America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150 plus years of football history and memorabilia. And find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I would like to introduce my co-host, the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon. The one, the only, the infamous traveling Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show.
Captain, so good to be back. So very good to be back. You know what they say about traveling? It's a lot of fun, but it's the best part is just coming home.
I know that well. I mean, we traveled extensively in the end of May, beginning of June. Yeah. And we had another quick trip back to Connecticut for a few family events and family issues. Mm-hmm. And we're back home. And as I said to people when we landed in Wilmington, I got on my hands and knees and kissed the ground.
I felt like I was backpacking with you and you and Brenda. I mean, I was getting photos of Spain and the food and the wine and
that was a pretty intensive.
Loved it.
Vacation. It was very, very busy, very active. Lot to see and do in a very short period of time.
Totally.
And man, oh man, I was exhausted coming home after that trip. And Connecticut, even though we were only there for 4.5 days, that was pretty intensive at the same time, running around from one part of the state to the other, visiting family, friends, events, so on.
Just to be able to drink a glass of water at the table instead of ordering a bottled water or something like that. To be able to drink the ice. I think my second day in Mexico for World Cup, we were watching game four of the NBA Finals in a bar, and I drank a bunch of gin and 7-Up, and the ice gave me a tummy ache. And
oh boy.
That night, it's just Montezuma paid a visit to me and put me on tilt for a couple days. So just the ice in your drinks will get you too.
Yeah, that's why you should be drinking a good Mexican beer if you are down there. That's my only recommendation.
I switched it up. Yeah, I got smart. I switched it up. But
unbelievable. Yeah. Well, today we're going to do an open forum, and the topic, one of the topics we're going to talk about is something we've talked about in the past, but it's getting revisited again, and it usually does when certain pieces of certain cards, certain pieces of memorabilia start to re-enter the market. And again, I've always said this, our hobby is cyclical. As collectors get older, they start selling off pieces of their collection. some rare items that we don't see, and or expensive items we don't t necessarily see start to enter the market again. They're ones of ones, ones of twos. They're very, very difficult to find, so on and so forth. And just to just give some background, and I know I've been in the hobby a long time, and I've gone to card shows for many, many years. And like I tell a lot of folks on Vintage Football community, when I was at shows in the 1980s, I did not see a lot of cards in, especially older 48, 49 Leafs, 48 Bowmans, 35 Chicles. 35 Chicles were rare to me. I saw probably four or five in a 10-year period from 80 to 89 at a show. Mayos, I never saw one at a show, in all honesty, until the 90s. My first Mayos I actually bought were via mail order. And I was just perchance upon them. I got two beaters. I don't even want to say what I paid for them because everybody would get sick right now if they had heard. I just wanted to see what they were. And I didn't find, I hate to say it, I didn't find them overly attractive because they were so beaten up. But I also understand a card from 1894 back in 1988 was over almost 100 years old, and
Yeah,
they're pretty
totally.
rare. The Chicles, I still remember the first Chicle I ever bought at a show in Connecticut. And that was in 19, roughly, I was probably 1989 or 90. I bought a Ken Strong card, which was in really nice condition. And I don't want to say what I paid for that card either, which I thought was outrageous. But then I also said to myself, gee, it's not too often I see these cards, and I would like one type card for my collection to have and to hold. And fast forward, what, almost 40 plus years later in the hobby, it seems like everything is everywhere. And if you have enough cash, you can buy any card you want in the market, as much as it may be rare or as much as it may be expensive. But the topic of rarity can be applied to a very, very obscure set. One, I never owned one in all the years I've been collecting. The only time I ever saw one was twice at a national, both times in Chicago. And that is the Sibbler's Bakery set. And Joe, I'm going to hand it off to you. Give us a little background on that set and what it actually
Yeah, a lot of what I know about the set came from Carl Lamadella. I mean, he's done quite a bit of research on it, and I tip my hat to him. As we've said before, there's people who've done a lot of research on these things prior, and this is I'm going to share something I got from Carl. This is a scan that he put up
Right.
Talks about whoops, sorry, I'm having a hard time scanning down. And but you can see this was here's how you win trading cards. You don't even have to buy anything. Your parents just come in and ask for them. And when you spell out Silbers Bakery, you can get here's a list of things you can get. You could win Silbers trading cards. You win tickets for two to see your Baltimore Courts play, or a delicious decorated full layer cake, or an autographed football by the entire team. And while you're there, pick up some Ryan Black nutritious bread. But here it is. If you spell it out, Silbers, nothing to buy, have your parents come on in, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's easy enough. And then lo and behold, you go over here, and here's Y.A. Tittle as the, as the chase card. So basically, it's a local promotion. We've talked before about local sets and how esoteric, how rare they are. So this was just handed out. The this topic came up on VFC. The rookie card for Y.A. Tittle is commonly, the 1950 Bowman. It's a pretty cool, pretty rare card, but the Silbers card set came out in 1949.
Right.
Is
And a lot of people don't even realize he was a Colt.
It wasn't cool. Yeah. Yeah. That's another
I
very
mean,
good trick.
that's the one thing that a lot of people don't realize, that they always, either think of them as 49ers or you think of them as a New York
Giant.
Giant.
Yeah.
And that's a spectacular card.
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's the back of it. It says Silver's trading card, win free. Tickets for two to a Colts home game. Official football autographed by the Colts. Colts cake baked by Silver's. Well, that's a tongue twister. How to win. Each trading card bears a letter of the word silver. Silver's, excuse me. When you get the right cards to spell Silver's, bring them in to your nearest Silver's bake shop for your prize. Then it lists the locations and there it is. Carl, who's done a lot of homework on this. Oh, and I wanted to, if people aren't sure what the size of this is, I brought something in to compare your standard large and card unit.
You're almost equivalent with a
And I
Silver's
mentioned
card.
that I was new to the hobby, and I saw, I want to say it was Hunt had a Silver's, YA Tittle card. This is probably 19 years ago, and I didn't realize how rare it was. It was a cool card. It was on the front cover of the catalog. A very cool card. It's one of those was like, that's cool. I wouldn't mind owning that. And it went for, double what I had in mind. And I don't even
Right.
know. It was 19 years ago. So I want to say 4 years ago, this card came up, and I don't remember what auction, but by then I knew how rare the silvers were, and and we were just talking about, rare versus expensive, and this time it hit that must win list, and I was happy enough to win it for a little bit less than I even had set aside, but that's just, it's one of the cards that I'm proud to have in my collection. I absolutely love it. Carl had assembled this list. He's done a lot of homework on this. And so when Carl does some of these, I tend to take screenshots of it. Hang on just a second. I have to go back to
And
the
while you're pulling that, 2 points I like to make. If anybody, always, and well, let me rephrase that. Back in the 80s and 90s, early 90s, it was very possible to collect every football card printed. People used to get them. So once you got done with your mainstream sets, you went into your oddball sets. And I remember a lot of people saying, I'm collecting any oddball set from 48 to 88. And that included the police sets, the Topps insert sets, the Fleer Philly insert sets, so on and so forth. So that was always available, that was always part of the collecting lore. The Silvers, which again, I didn't actually even see one until I was at a national in Chicago one time, 1 year. And I was shocked by it. And then the information slowly started coming around from Carl and a couple other people in the hobby with regards to finding what they were, so on and so forth. And then the second point I want to make, I really wonder, A, what that autographed football looked like, what that like. And how many actual kids at the time were able to collect the whole set and turn the set back in? And what did they do with those cards? Did they recycle them again and hand them out again? We'll never know,
Did they punch him? Who knows?
Yeah.
It's so rare. But here's something that Carl posted several years. I don't remember when, but he's done a lot of the homework. You just said how many people redeemed, the cards for for the football or the tickets, and there are no known E's. So
Right.
that's the chase card. That's the William McKinley, chase card. If you look at Carl's list there of the cards that are known, I counted it out. There are two cards, the Tittle and the O'Rourke, that have been found in two letters. The Tittle is the I and the S, and the O'Rourke is the L and the R. Count those as one each. There are five known copies of L, five known copies of S. Obviously, there's two S's in silver. Three I's, three B's, and three R's for a total of 19 known copies of Silver's cards.
All right, so if we have 19 known copies of that card, how do we put a value on the card itself? And this is something that we've talked about and debated over the year. I mean, we've talked about this, when we first started doing the show, over whatever it's been, almost 15 years now. So how do we place a price on it? All right, so you get the classic collecting concept is the card is only worth what another person is willing to pay for it. The second area that I look at more closely today, I don't think there are enough, and I could be completely wrong, but I don't think there's enough oddball set
Collector.
collectors out there
Correct.
anymore for football.
Correct.
Talking football. I also don't think there are a lot of collectors out there in the market anymore collecting the oddball individual, what they feel is a rookie card compared to a regular mainstream Leaf, Bowman, Philly, Fleer, Topps card. So we go, in a roundabout manner, I go back to my question, what's this card worth? $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. And again, we can use a gauge to a certain degree. And we've talked about this on the show numerous times. How many Mayos are out there? Are there 50? Are there 100? I still believe there's a small amount of Mayos in the market.
Totally agree.
Not that many cards out there. Excuse me. So, long story short, what are your feelings on value for that set and why?
Well, you nailed it. I mean, I wasn't a rare card collector until 15 years ago when I got a call from Andy Becker, at MSV, who's like, hey, I've got some SPCs. That are coming up in the next auction. I thought I might give you a whack at them, and I was like, well, what's an SPC? I mean, and then he starts explaining to me. I mean, we're on the phone for an hour of him telling me about SPC, just explaining it to me. And then later on he called me about the Pottsville postcards. I mean, Andy and John Spano, MSV, got me into oddball sets, and I just began to migrate to those. I think those are cooler than mainstream. I mean, would I rather have a 35 Chickle Ken Strong, or would I rather have a 1949 Silvers YA Tittle? Where, I mean, and if you're a football hobbyist, you know who YA Tittle is, obviously. And if you see that card and you realize that it's a pre-rookie, it kind of gets the spidey senses tingling. You're like, okay, that's cool. I mean, 19 years ago, 18 years ago, whatever it was, when I first saw that in Hunt Auction, I was like, that's cool. I didn't know enough about the set to realize how rare it was, but I knew enough to be like, that's really cool. I wouldn't mind owning it. So I think you're right. There are mainstream collectors, and there's people who don't bother, don't know, or maybe don't bother. I think VFC is filled. We're Camelot here. A lot of us know about these things. So I don't think that Silver's card is worth that much. I mean, because it is so thinly traded, there's not that many people out there to be interested in it. I mean,
All right, so if you stated that, and I agreed with you to that extent, we go to an auction, go to a huge auction house like an Heritage, like an REA, like a Love of the Game, and it goes out there. And typically, this is my opinion, and I could be way off base, but from what I've seen over the years, you either got several bidders who got to have the card, or you got one bidder and the other ones just spread out and they're gone because either it's
Yeah,
high
good
end
point.
bid or they're saying, nah, that I don't like that card, whatever the case may be. So obviously, with the Silvers, when they go to auction, we have to try to be futuristic in our view. There'll be 10 bidders, five bidders, no bidders. We don't know. I mean, that's the roll of the dice as far as as far as that's concerned. So,
And I think it's our job here. That's the job of hobby chat rooms like a VFC, is to educate even our hobbyists. I mean, I've said it before. I've got the best seat in the house right here. There's a lot of times you're talking to a guest about something, about a football set, and I'm listening. I'm
Right.
as much a listener as I am, the co-host. I mean, and reading Gridiron Greats, being on really good chat boards where people are incredibly willing to share their knowledge. I mean, I've mentioned Carl twice and sharing stuff. I mean, I know most of what I know about silvers from him. I know most of what I know about, SPCs from other collectors who've seen
Right.
stuff like that. I've only seen probably five silvers cards. I think I bought one 10 years ago just so I had a companion piece,
Yeah.
and then I sold it 3 years ago to somebody, or 5 years ago, to somebody who didn't have one. So I had the Grossman at one point, and I got rid of it and figured, I'm never going to complete that set. So,
Right. And I think, that I came to a realization with my collection, my oddball collection. There were certain sets I was never going to complete. And, it wasn't a question of running out of patience. It was just a question of, okay, let somebody else in the hobby enjoy these sets. That's the way I'm figuring. And, as I sold off, I still accumulated type cards from these sets. For example, a 72 Sunoco update stamp. What does it look like? Okay, I got a few as a type card. The 69, I'm sorry, the no brother, not my mind's blank. But other cards are similar, trying to find, a type card just to keep a type card of it, so on and so forth.
I'm exactly right. I had the entire Mayo set at one point. Decided to get I got bored and sold it. The only one I kept was this one,
The beauty.
the Beauty. And that, if I'm going to keep one, that's the one I'm going to keep. And
Right.
again, if you're at home, just a size comparison. By the way, that Largent on the stand over your left shoulder,
You
I
see,
love
I make
that.
sure, I'm sure it's, I want to make sure it's visible in our shows.
It makes me smile. I mean, the 89 Pacific Largent Wax Pack did have to get bumped to a different shelf for obvious, real estate needs, but
Wow.
the rookie's still
One day they may be gone and they may be opened. And
there.
I'll start searching the nickel boxes at whatever show I'm at. And I pull out a couple hundred of them, type of thing. And I've hit the
The Chase card in that 89 Pacific Largent set is the crotch card, obviously.
Well, I'll tell you, all kidding aside, your Oral Wheat Seattle Seahawks sets are difficult to find, especially on the East Coast. And I said that before. When I was collecting everything, I rarely encountered any, and I don't know how I came upon. I did a trade with somebody or whatever, and I got a handful of the 90 Oral Wheat Seahawks set. I don't have a complete set of it, but at least I got a few type cards of it.
The Oro Wheat Largent card was really hard, but I mean, there's two different collectors. I mean, there were several different facets of it.
Yeah.
The collector who collects what they collected as a child. So I'm sure there's a bunch of people my age who were like, I only collect, 78, 79, and on.
Yeah.
My first set was 78. My first set I really collected was 79. I mean, and I look at those still. And it just brings back this tidal wave of memories of just
Right.
in the past. I've never opened this pack. I mean, this to me is more embracing the hobby, embracing the history of the NFL. So if you're a hobbyist who's only collecting what you did as a child, that's one thing. If you're somebody who likes to spread their wings a little bit, like I did, then that's it. I mean, but I think if you're on a chat room like a VFC, you're probably naturally curious about other sets. And that's
Right.
what comes in. So,
And I always say to myself, looking at staring at my run of binders, that the sets from 60 to 69, I'll go as far as go 60 to 72 will be the toughest sets for me to sell. 60 to 72 tops, 60, 63 Fleer, 64, to 67 Philly.
Your
Six.
beloved 65 Philly, your beloved 65 Philly, 65 tops.
I mean, that represents my childhood. And again, when I was collecting, I did have vague memories of what Fleer cards looked like. I never owned them until later on in life, but I had vague vague memory somehow of somewhere seeing it somewhere, you know, and I don't know where, I don't know why. Maybe I was trying to be, you know, what's the word? I was trying to envision that I had bought them somehow, which I never did because I know my first packs were 65.
65 tops.
Yeah.
I remember buying my first like 61 Fleer card, and it showed up and it had a dot up at the top. I bought a raw card. I'm like, oh, that's a print defect. I remember trying to scrape it a little bit.
Yep.
It was Bart Starr, just a little dot. And then I bought another one and it had the same dot. And I realized that was part of the card. I remember buying my first 65 tops. I forget which card it was, but I was, you know, collecting the Hall of Fame rookie card set, and it showed up and it was a tall boy. And I was like, this is a mistake. They don't make cards like this. And I'm like, what the hell? Nobody mentioned this was this size. This is so weird.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And it was odd to me. You know, and I can remember going on the PSA chat boards at the time and like, is this correct? Is this the right, you know? Somebody's like, yeah, they're called the tall boys for a reason. I mean, that's why
I liked the 92 game day so much, because it reminded me so much of the
yeah,
65
the
tops.
Hall. Yep.
I know I broke open probably two or three boxes of that, and I made up a few sets of it. And it was just fun because it was, and again, there was, I don't think there were any inserts in it either. It was just a plain set to put together.
Yeah.
So it was fun. It was fun to put together. So.
Well, for everybody at home, I thought I'd do this and just put two very rare cards side by side for just a second for probably one
yep.
of the first times. I'm not sure
yep.
my name blocks that, but
and again, we got and we could also throw in, because there's been so much action on the Bronco Nagurski card, the 35 Chickle. And I'm, you know, in a way, I am just very happy for the hobby to see that going on, for the simple reason the 35 Chickle set finally actually has some respect in the actual seriousness of how few 35 Chickles exist.
Totally.
Any condition. I'm not talking about graded cards in any condition. And again, I go back to the 80s and early 90s. They were not readily available at any show I went to.
Yep. Well, it stunned me, even, you know, 10, 12 years ago, that a PSA 8, you know, McMillan would sell for $1,500 or $1,200.
Yep.
And I was like, this is a, you know, a 90-year-old set. I mean, in PSA 8, this thing should be worth more. I mean, it really surprised me that how inexpensive they were. I mean, $1,200, it's a lot of money. I mean, but, you know, in comparison. So I'm of the opinion that those cards are coming up to where their price should be as more and more collectors collect them.
Right.
Not that they're you know, they're the meteoric rise of the price. I don't know. I think that should be a $3,000 to $5,000 card, an 80-year-old set, you know, in a PSA 8. It should be. I mean, the Nagurskis, obviously, when you have PSA 2s, you know, selling for $50,000, that has reached stratospheric status of, you know.
And as it should, because again, I mean, that's to me the keys to vintage football, whether anybody wants to accept it or not. I include the 1894 Mayos. I also include the Chickles. Okay. I also include the football Spaldings. And I also include a lot of the more rare postcards, which have football players, star players on our teams on them at the same time. So you have a lot of stuff that can be collected. You could argue with me very, very convincingly, I just want to collect pre-World War II football. There's plenty of stuff to collect. There's postcards, there's programs, there's ticket stubs. They're the mainstream sets, the not-so-mainstream sets. There's a lot of stuff you can collect to really have a nice vintage. There's vintage books, so on and so forth. So, again, are they rare? Are they expensive?
Yeah.
Are they high value? Well, when a book from the 1890s of football in nice condition only sells for $20, $25.
Yeah.
I'm kind of taken back by that whole thing for the simple reason. How many books are in existence? 10, 20, maybe 30, and because of the libraries that hold it, so on and
Yeah.
so forth. It just truly amazes me.
Yep. Well, that Silber's Bakery is probably rarer than the Star Player Candy you mentioned. Rogers Pete is another rare, 1928 to 1929 set. The 26 Pottsville Maroon postcards. There's a lot of really cool, the little regional sets that came out like that. I mean, and they're all incredibly rare. I mean, I think I own four Rogers Pete cards. I think there are only four football Roger Pete cards. And then, what is there, like 22, 25 SPC Star Player Candy cards? I think I own about five or six of those. I mean, I was, I think I had a dozen of those at one point. I'm like, this is something that's going to take me a lifetime to even indent in. They're so rare. I mean, where do you even start? Asking people if they have any?
And I found it interesting as I was collecting over the years, and it became a little more prevalent in the 90s when the explosion occurred. I actually conversed with several collectors who said, I'm only going to do a typeset, meaning that they would come in to the shop I was working at and they would go through a box. And it was interesting what they would pull out. They would pull out like one, this card, Pinnacle football card. Pacific football cards, so on and so on. And they would only buy like 10, 15 cards. And I said, are you collecting a team or whatever? And they said, no, we're collecting a typeset. There's no way we're going to collect all these cards. So now we want to get a base card from all the sets, mainstream sets. And they were going back, to very old sets too, doing Bowman's and Leafs and so on and so forth. And I said to myself, that's nice because at least you got a type card of what you have of the set. And at least you could see what it looks like. You could physically hold one type of thing. And again, how many collectors out there are complete, starting with the explosion in 1990 to 2025, 26?
Yeah, completionist. Yep. I mean, and I used to be a completionist. I used to be like, I want to collect the 1950 Bowman set. There's 144 cards in that. I mean, I have 130, there's 14 to go. I love that. I loved just how structured that was. And now I guess everybody changes in what you're collecting. And
Oh yeah.
sometimes you reach the top of the hill, you look around and you descend, But do you think you're going to make it to the National this year?
No, I with everything going on, I
Traveled out.
yeah, I'm traveling. I still got to get back to Connecticut for my 50th high school reunion in
Ooh.
August. So that's another 4 days, 5 days I'm going to be gone. So I'm not going this year. And what after excuse me, what I saw, I'm not overly enthused about going back. I don't want to fight the crowds. It's just not a comfortable show to walk anymore. There's no seats to sit, to relax, that type of thing. And you're competing with Pokemon. I mean, that's a big part of that show now.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. The rise of that. I know nothing about it, nor do
And
I
it's
care to.
it's a little it's just not my cup of tea anymore. And again, like I told the local promoter here in Wilmington, which he got upset when I said it. I said, if you do a show for sports only, I'll be more than happy to go, but I'm not doing any Pokemon shows with you. And that's it. And that's his bread and butter now. It's not my 1930s sports magazines that I bring to a show. Because I got probably five or six people in the entire show that comes in that would actually be even interested in looking at them, type of thing.
Well, I was kicking around going. I had some wax packs I wanted to cross over. I've been for a couple of years, I've been collecting wax packs with the intent, and GAI has certain wax packs that if the number starts with a one or a zero is back in the Mike Baker days. So you can kind of trust that they're good. But This is so I buy these from time to time with the intent to get them crossed over. This is a 52 Bowman large wax pack. I wanted to get crossed. I don't know. The I bought when I bought this probably 8, 9 years ago. And since then, the seal on the back has
That's coming
lifted.
up.
Yeah. So I mean, it's in really good shape. It got graded. I mean, this is one of those where it's like I hope I catch Steve Hart in a good mood, you know. Yeah. I used to have a 52 Bowman wax pack and PSA 8 15 years ago, and I traded it at a national for a Chickle card. I can't remember what it was. I wish I had that wax pack back.
Wow.
Next one is a GAI 7.5 1953 Bowman.
Wow. Those
Wow.
are very tough to come back.
I've only seen a couple. I mean, and it's good in the back on the bottom, but
Yeah.
the back top is lifting up. But
Yeah.
again, it's graded or graded in the time. So we shall see. And then lastly was a 58 tops wax pack with the old Jim Brown. This again starts at the number one, and it's in really good shape. This is the kind of that'll cross over, I'm hoping. The other two, that's a coin flip, Captain. And then this is kind of a whim, 58,
Okay.
excuse me, 50, 51 Topps Magic. I've never
Magic.
seen one before, so I wanted to buy it. I always forget how tiny they are. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, four wax packs that have been sitting here on my desk for about a year and a half. Hoping to make it to a national. So I think I might have to do it the old-fashioned way and send them in. But I know the wheels of grading, have ground to a halt. They've stopped the PSA specials because they're far behind. I even think they sent an email out
Except
to
they stopped. They're not accepting any submissions until they get caught
Yep,
up.
they paused it for 2 to 3 months until they get caught up.
Apparently, most of the submissions are new stuff, and they have an overload of Pokemon being. So, what if?
You're like George Bush when he'd say Saddam Hussein when you say Pokemon. It's the Pokemon. No,
Pokemon. I mean, it's.
no, 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 no. I apologize. You keep saying Pokemon. That's you.
Yeah, I don't
Okay.
call
It
it
just makes me
Pokemon.
chuckle. Saddam Hussein.
Well, last show I did in Wilmington, I'm set up with the father and son Pokemon, and I just shook my head because I mean they had people waiting in line,
Oh my goodness.
and they were selling. I didn't even know what it was selling. He tried to explain to me it's like a game thing, and then. Yeah, they were just selling it nonstop, and I just laughed about the whole thing because I just said it's it's a craze, and I've seen a lot of crazes. I've seen Beanie Babies, I've seen Pogs,
Beanie Babies. I love it. Cabbage Patch Dolls.
Cabbage Patch Doll. When I was in graduate school,
I think I got a smile out of you when you said Cabbage Patch. I love it.
Patch
And
Dolls. I
here
worked at.
you are set up, selling Gridiron Gates magazines and some old football cards. And he's got a line around the table for Pokemon.
It's just ridiculous. I
I
mean,
love that.
and again, I still believe, and I know John Spano and I are doing a show in Myrtle Beach in August,
Oh, nice.
but at least the show, the way it was explained to both of us, he separates the sports cards dealers in one hall, and the Pokemans in a completely other hall, and that's the only way I did that show, and that's
Yeah.
it. So we'll see how we both make out with
Yep.
basically vintage stuff
Yep.
at the.
I enjoyed watching a show when I was gone. I forget who your guest was. Dang,
Harv Aronson. I had Harv on.
I don't think I've ever seen him or outside of did he since we've switched to the video format, has he been on
Never
the
did a
show?
video with us.
Okay.
He's always been on the column, so.
Yeah. Great. I loved that show. That was fun. It is always fun to see your intro. I mean, it's different watching the show with somebody else,
Right.
as a co-host, but I enjoy listening to it. It's just kind of it's different. It was cool. It was a good show. I really liked it. So
I'm glad.
I mean, yeah, I watched that one when you posted up on VFC, and I watched it after I got back from World Cup. The other football World Cup going on. America plays tomorrow. The USA team made it past their group into the round of 32, the playoffs. So then now it's sudden death. There are 32 teams that made it, so there's 16 games. They had one game on Monday, three games yesterday, three games today, three games tomorrow. So they have 5 days of three games, and that'll whittle it down from 32 to 16. And then they'll have 4 days of two games a day
Each.
and whittle it down to eight, and then four, and then two. And there can be only one.
That's right.
You're the
That's right.
home. Well, we were talking before the show. This is my fourth World Cup in a row that I've gone to. My first one's
Wow.
Brazil, and then we went to Russia, to Moscow, and St. Petersburg, and Sochi, and then we last year was in Qatar, and then this year is in North America. Canada has two venues. America, I think, has seven, and Mexico has two venues. Well, we flew down to Mexico. Because as we say, we want a World Cup is about being in a out of country experience for us. So we flew down to Mexico for game one, match one. Mexico City opened up against South Africa in Mexico, or Mexico opened up against South Africa in Mexico City. And it's unlike anything I've ever been. I mean, Mexico fans travel incredibly well. Every World Cup I've been to, we try to see Mexico. Their fans are zealots. They're diehards. They make noise. They have chants, and it's different. You go to a football game, and you've got your fans. You're waving your flags. You've got your terrible towels, the wave, et cetera. But it's a little different when it's a country, that's coming together, and so the national anthem, the Mexican national anthem, comes up. And it was blistering hot. It was probably 95, which is hot for this Oregonian. And so they'd handed out these flat cardboard sombreros that you push the thing out of, and then you put it over your head. So they finished the national anthem. We were right behind the goal in the home section, like three rows up. And the entire 20,000 people, I think there was 65, 70,000 people in the stadium. So the 20,000 people behind us at the end of the national anthem throw all their cardboard sombreros down. So it just starts raining sombreros and people throwing popcorn and this stuff. And you're just kind of ducking, going, "Holy moly, that's a lot!" And they're chanting, singing, and chants. I've never been at a home stadium when the home team scores a goal. And I was curious because Mexico fans are zealots, like I said. That goal happened, and deafening sound. The entire I've been in stadiums where football, where touchdowns to decide playoffs are made, all of it, that was an eruption like I hadn't seen. Throwing beers, throwing hats, you name it. I mean, I'm like, whoa. I get hit in the side of the face with a beer cup. They're in plastic beer cups. They open the can and pour it in there. But I mean, spraying beer, throwing, I mean, you name it. My buddy's like, that was like a $10,000 worth of beer got spilled goal.
That's cool.
It's amazing to be in another country trying to speak their language, and it revolves around World Cup. I mean, I'm a football diehard, fan, but I don't watch soccer when I'm here at home. I mean, Portland has a major league soccer team, MLS team, the Portland Timbers, but I mean, I might go to five games a year, and I'd never watch it on TV, but trust me, I'm glued to the TV, watching World Cup when I get.
Soccer, I can remember back in high school, we had a pretty good soccer team in high school, so I think, I enjoyed watching them, so on and so forth. And when I was in college, when I wrote for the school paper, The soccer team really had no coverage whatsoever. And I might have written maybe one or two articles on them, and they were very appreciative of it because they really didn't have any press at the time. And then all of a sudden, soccer started to really take off in the late 80s, early 90s. And in my day, 76, Pelé went to play for the New York Cosmos. And that was a big deal. So all the papers would follow Pele, and I actually got to watch him on TV with the Cosmos, which I thought was really cool. So I've always enjoyed soccer. I like the sport. It's a very, given all the, if you cut out all the fake injuries and everybody's just, holding
Well, they're
their.
starting to crack down on that. They're handing out yellow cards, penalties
Yeah,
for
they
being.
have. They have
And
to.
in that first Mexico game, there's a guy who was down at the goal. They're trying to score a goal. Somebody bumped into him. He takes 3.5 steps and then flops. And that's the kind of crap that us Americans and people who watch rugby or something like that abhor about the sport. Well, they video reviewed it. They call it video assist review VAR, VAR, and they gave him a yellow card. They penalized him for flopping. And it was game one, match one, and they penalized guy for flopping, and that set the tone.
And they should. They should.
And they should.
It get overplayed to a large degree. One real quick story is talking about other sports. We were in Bilbao, Spain, and I see all these guys.
On your recent vacation, you mean?
And this past vacation, Bilbao, Spain was the first stop that we
Oh,
made
gotcha.
out of flying out of Paris. So long story short, I see all these guys with these. I thought they were soccer shirts. I didn't realize they were rugby shirts. And there was some sort of international match in Bilbao at their stadium, which I got to just see driving by on a bus tour. And I believe it was either England or Ireland against France, I think. And there were a bunch of guys in the lobby. They're all talking, and I'm listening. I'm sitting there, I'm listening. It was really hot that day there. And then I finally got up, and one of the guy's wives said to me in perfect English, and she said, "You mind if are you leaving? Could I sit in your chair?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "You should have told me before if you wanted to sit." And she said, "Oh, thank you." She said, "These guys are going to talk for the next 2 hours." And I said, "Is the game over?" And she said, "Oh yeah, it's
That's the
over."
way Brenda feels, by the way, when you get together with us.
I said, "I feel bad." She said, "Oh no, don't feel bad." And I said, so then we went walking in town there, and a lot of guys had their jerseys on, and I said to Brendan, "Geez, if I'd known that was the day before, we could have just flown in an extra day beforehand and gotten to the hotel, and I could have scored some ticket." They have a beautiful stadium. I don't know, it was like 60, 70,000 capacity, and middle of the city. And they had that big event, and that's why they said at the hotel there's going to be a lot of people the first day there, and then the second day a lot of them checked out and they were flying back home, so it was pretty cool to see.
Guy, one of my buddies, there's me and three buddies. This is our fourth World Cup. One of them used to play college rugby. So we get a lot of rugby stories. In fact, a lot of the chants that we've made up come from old rugby stuff. And so he'll show us rugby videos every once in a while. Those are some big, thick boys. I mean, you look at the legs on those guys, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's like Franco Harris or Ronnie Lott and Cam Chancellor running at you at the same time and hitting you get out of the way. But I mean, it's cool. So I mean, one of the games we went to see in Mexico before we left was Colombia versus Uzbekistan. Not a lot of Uzbekistan fans in there. Like the camera found a patch of four and they kept fanning over to that. But the entire stadium is filled with Colombia. So we wore
I
Colombia
believe
jerseys, just so we didn't get knifed. And Japan played 2 days later at the same, Aztec Stadium in Mexico City. So some Japanese fans were there. There were four Japanese people sitting behind us, not a stick of English. They're
Yeah.
wearing their Japanese jerseys and they're at a game. The
Yeah.
Colombia fans are behind them. They're giving them shots. And the guy's like, oh, all right, one shot. I'm seven beers in, but I'm the kind of guy who I stack my beer cups. So I got this tall thing of beer that I'm drinking from, and I turn around and the guy's got one beer. So I'm like, no, you got it. So you're just pointing, and he's, so he realizes, and it's one of those, I'm sure you've seen the videos of just, Japanese fans in Dallas trying barbecue, the Scottish in Boston. I mean, it's incredible.
It's a special event. It's a celebration of what sport really should be. You know what I mean?
And
The
there's so
country.
many people who are like, I had no idea America was this beautiful. So many other countries were like, this is incredible. The food, the people, the culture. I mean, and you catch the same thing in Mexico, where it's like Colombian fans giving shots of tequila to a Japanese fan. They don't speak each other's language. I bought the Japanese guy a beer. I would high five him when Colombia would score. And I'm sure he's at home now talking about Colombia fans and tequila and the great white Godzilla in front of me, who's had seven beers stacked up. And
That's the
that's it.
essence. That's the essence of sports. That's what sports is about. You know,
That is a beautiful
celebration
way
of
to
the
put it.
game,
That is the essence of sport. It kind of
celebration of the game,
gave me
celebration
goosebumps.
of culture, celebration of the chess master watching on the field, especially with soccer, especially with football. It is what it is. You know, that's the nice part about it. And I'm glad, you know, we were able to host it, especially on our 250th birthday here too, on top of it. So it makes it even more special. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
It'll
And
still be going
you
on.
said.
Imagine the fans who are here for 4th of July on 250, and imagine those stories back home where they're like, wow,
Exactly. So it's a pretty cool thing to say the least. It's always interesting for me for July 4th because I graduated high school basically 18 days before the 200th bicentennial, 4th of July, 76. So it was always a special occasion for me. So now this is going to be very special for me for 250. 50 years later, where did the time go? And we'll be celebrating. Just amazing to me.
Yeah, I love it.
But all right, Gabe, look, and that's basically what we wanted to talk about today, with a situation of rarity versus pricing, a situation of what dictates the prices, and a lot of the stuff we reiterated and we've talked about before. But again, it's always good to touch base with it at the same time. And I still maintain, and I just hope there's still collectors out there who'll carry on the collecting of oddball football, of older football, of vintage football. And for those who are just interested, and we do get a lot of people who watch this and listen to our podcast. If you're interested in football collecting, memorabilia collecting, don't be afraid to do some research on it before you buy anything. Just don't arbitrarily run out and buy, oh, I bought this for $80, but it's only worth $10, blah, blah. I thought I got a good deal. Don't do that. Read about what you're interested in, whether it's a team, whether it's a set, whether it's an era, whatever the case may be. Read about, become educated about it. Because the more educated you become about your collection, the more enjoyment you're going to get out of the collection in the long run. And that's really what it's all about. You know, you're collecting things. Yeah, it's fun to make some money on it, but it's also fun to look at it and to see who possibly might have owned this program before, this pennant or ticket stub or whatever the case might be. You know, that's part of the hobby. That's what we need to get back to a certain degree. Not an app that tells me, oh, you're charging $40. This app says it's only 28. I'm only going to give you 20. I mean, that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, I'm sure you're seeing a lot more of that. It's interesting you say that, because I've one of my best friends here in Portland. I mean, he knows I collect, he knows I do the podcast, and probably like 5 6 years ago, he's like, I liked your show. I'm like, what? He's like, the show you just did, that was really interesting. He'd started listening to our Gridiron podcast. He doesn't collect. He's not a not that doesn't you know doesn't watch a lot of football. He just wanted to see what it was all about. And he watches mo he wa listens watches most of our podcasts, and it's interesting. And probably like 6 months ago, he's like, hey, check this out. I bought this Red Grange program from 1925. It was like his fifth game as a Bear. And I was like, "You're kidding me. You bought a program?" He's like, "Yeah, Redgrange is, the history of football." And I'm like, "That was so cool."
That is,
It kind of cracked me up. And I'm like, "You do realize that was the second game, in New York that was played. The first one, Wellington Mara wept." I'm like, "That is a very famous phrase, because he saved the New York football Giants with Redgrange coming to town." And I just kind of explained the history of it. And, it's fascinating. Somebody who doesn't watch football, doesn't know the history of the
And
game.
again,
He bought
you
it.
don't have to
It was
have a
cool.
million programs. You could have a nice collection of 100 programs that are all historical, 100
Yeah.
tickets, 50 cards of famous players, so on and so forth. Collect what you like and collect what's fun, but become educated about your collection. That's the big thing. And
Yeah.
that's what I really hope I see more of down the road. Not just people, with their apps taking pictures of every card on the table. And then, nickel and diamond you from morning to night type of thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. But
We're
yeah.
almost out of
Said
time.
made me happy that he bought something. It was cool. It was such a tip of the hat,
Yeah, exactly. I'm happy for him. I'm glad he bought that program. Maybe he'll buy some more down the road.
Hey, our next subscriber. Hey, Travis, if you're listening, subscribe to Gridiron Greats.
If you're not a subscriber to Gridiron Greats magazine,
What
what are
the
you
hell are
waiting
you
for?
waiting for?
GridironGreatsMagazine.com. And as an incentive, if you're watching, send me your address. Send it to Joe. I'll send you some sample copies and we'll get you going with that too. All right. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for watching. We'll be back. We got a few shows we need to do, and we will be doing them over the next few months in our summer collection. And until that time, we'll see you in the future. Thanks for watching. Joe, thanks for being back. Good seeing you again. We're
You too,
back on track.
sir.
Take care.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.